This is Mary Rose Cottingham returning with the Herald Review for Monday, May 9th, 2016. We continue now with the death notices. Decatur. Albert L. Allen, age 80 of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, May 7th, 2016 at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Albert's wishes for cremation will be arranged by the Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel. Private family services will be held at a later date with his final resting place at Graceland Cemetery. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. Decatur. Alfred J. Blickensdurfer, age 78, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, May 6, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate Al's life will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, May 11th, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in North Folk Cemetery in Long Creek Township, Illinois. Memorials are suggested to MDSO, Millikan School of Music, or the First Presbyterian Church. The family of Alfred J. Blickensdurfer is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Send condolences to the family at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Michael L. Clark, age 63 of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, May 7, 2016, in his home. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brittlinger and East Funeral Home at www.brittlingerandearl.com. Daniel R. Crabill, age 74, of Forsyth, Illinois, passed away on Friday morning, May 6, 2016, at 3:50 a.m. at Sarcoma of the Bladder at Victory Point Christian Village, Forsyth. A memorial service will be held at Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 10th, with visitation from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Burial will be next to his parents in Macon County Memorial Park, Harrison, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Forsyth United Methodist Church. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brittlingerandearl.com. Harriet Horn, age 93, of Decatur, passed away on Saturday, May 7, 2016, in Moden Creek Living Center. Private burial will be held in Point Pleasant Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the American Red Cross. The family of Harriet Horn is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Send condolences to the family at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Catherine R. Miller, age 38, of Blue Mound, Illinois, passed away at 12:22 p.m. Friday, May 6, 2016, in her home. There will be no services. Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Homes are assisting the family. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Brittlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.brittlingerandearl.com. Francis L. Sterling, age 89, of Decatur, passed away at 12:05 a.m. Saturday, May 7th, 2016, with her family by her side. Honoring Francis's wishes, cremation services will be held. No services are planned at this time. The family of Francis L. Sterling is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services, 2801 North Monroe Street, Decatur, Illinois. View the online obituary and send condolences and share memories to the family at www.moranandgoble.com. John Norman Tolley, age 46, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, May 5, 2016, in his residence. A service to celebrate John's life will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, May 12, 2016, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Macon. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation from 5 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday. John will be laid to rest in South Macon Township Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed to the GT Church on Heritage Behavioral Health Center. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family at www.dawson-wyckoff.com. Jody Forcom, age 31, of Decatur, passed away Wednesday, May 4, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. The family will be hosting a memorial gathering at 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 10, 2016, at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, 3955 Lord's Drive, Decatur, Illinois. Memorials are suggested to the wishes of the family in care of Sharon Sheets. The family of Jody Forcom is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur. Please view the online obituary and send condolences and share memories at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Alan D. Mull, Sr., age 58, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, May 5, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Memorial services to celebrate the life of Alan Dean Mall Sr. will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 11, 2016, at Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Memorials may be directed to Homeward Bound Pet Shelter in Decatur. The family of Alan Dean Mall Sr. is being served by Moran and Goble Funeral Home and Cremation Services. Please view the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at www.moranandgoble.com. Jim Skelly, age 73, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, May 5, 2016, at his home surrounded by his family. A massive Christian burial will be 11 a.m. Tuesday, May 10, 2016, at St. Patrick's Catholic Church, 407 East El Dorado, Decatur, with the Reverend John Burnett celebrant. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Saints James and Patrick Parish. The family of Jim Skelly is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois. Please view the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Roy Eugene Smith, age 71, of Decatur, passed away at 1:50 a.m. Saturday, May 7th, in his home. Funeral services will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, May 11th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Visitation will be 6:08 p.m. Tuesday, May 10th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta, Illinois, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be made to Decatur Memorial Hospital Hospice, and condolences may be left to the family in care of Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home at www.britlingerandearl.com. Irene Reaney Wheeler, age 71, of Decatur, formerly of Houston, Texas, died Wednesday, April 27th, at St. Mary's Hospital in Decatur. Per her wishes, cremation services were afforded by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, www.gracelandfairlawn.com. Arrangements for memorial celebration are pending. Reaney would be honored by contributions to the Salvation Army or the Humane Society of the United States. Earl L. Brackenbush, 85, of Vandalia, passed away Wednesday, May 4th, at Vandalia, Illinois. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, May 9th, 2016, at Northside Christian Church, Vandalia, Illinois, with Pastor Carl Rhodes officiating. Burial will be followed at Fairlawn Cemetery, Vandalia, with military rites. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Monday, May 9th, at the Northside Christian Church. Memorials, Northside Christian Church, Vandalia, Miller Home Funeral, Vandalia, is in charge of arrangements, and online memories and condolences may be shared with the family at www.millerfh.net. Paul F. Skelly, age 86, from Decatur, retired Air National Guard veteran, died on Wednesday, May 4, 2016. Massive Christian burial will be 11 a.m. Monday, Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation 1 hour before services in the church and burial will be at Boiling Springs Cemetery with military rites. Memorials may be made to Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church or the Decatur Memorial Hospital Palliative Care and Hospice. Send condolences to www.moranandgoible.com. Turning now again to the local section of the Herald and Review, this article is headlined, Boys and Girls Club Welcomes Staffers. The Boys and Girls Club of Decatur, Incorporated is pleased to announce the promotion of Brandon Miller as Program Director and welcomes Shamika Bond as Education Coordinator for the organization. Brandon was born and raised in Chicago. He attended Millikan University, graduating with a bachelor's degree in fitness and sports. He is a member of the Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. Brandon has been with the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur for 2 years and served as education coordinator before being promoted to program director in April. He is very excited to step into his new role and is looking forward to what the future holds. His responsibilities include, but are not limited to, coordinating, implementing, and supervising the education, character, and career development program and the sports, fitness, and recreation program. Assist the executive director in the day-to-day coordination and supervision of the administration of the facility, and supervise, evaluate, and direct the work of the club's contractual employees. Shamika is from Decatur and attended the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur as a child. She obtained her degree in liberal arts from Richland Community College in 2015. From 2007 to 2009, Shamika served as case manager for the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur and began serving as education coordinator in April. Her responsibilities include, but are not limited to, assisting with the development, coordination, and supervision of the activities within the character and leadership development, education and career development, and health and life skills core service areas of programming. Our next article is headlined, Donnell Joins Keystone Meadows. Christy Donnell has been named Wellness Director for Keystone Meadows and will lead a host of changes geared toward the improved health and happiness of its residents. My passion is giving the geriatric population the quality of care they deserve and to make them feel at home in our facility, said Donnell, who comes to Keystone Meadows with more than 20 years of experience in the nursing field. Christy and I complement each other well with our similar backgrounds in management and a shared vision of quality care within the nursing department. I'm happy to be working with her, said Renee Coleman, Executive Director. Keystone Meadows, at 1415 West Mound Road, is a full-service, all-inclusive residence for seniors. It's been serving the Decatur area since 1999. For more information, go to keystoneseniorliving.com or call 217-877-5327. Our next article is headlined, Baby Talk Earns Quality Designation. Baby Talk Early Head Start has received the Gold Circle of Quality designation from Accelerate Illinois, the state's quality recognition and improvement system for early learning and development providers. Accelerate Illinois helps families make more informed choices about their children's early learning. It establishes standards to help infants, toddlers, and preschoolers develop intellectually, physically, socially, and emotionally. Additionally, it provides a framework for early learning and development professionals to identify opportunities to enhance their knowledge and skills. Baby Talk Early Head Start is elated with its newest designation as the center has been hardworking and dedicated to the arduous process. We are proud to receive the Gold Circle of Quality, said Courtney Kirk, director of Baby Talk Early Head Start. Providing quality in early learning and development will help our children in Decatur be prepared for success in school and in life. The agency has been promoting early childhood development since 1986 and started an early Head Start program in 2010, consolidating the classrooms 2 years later at 710 West Macon Street. The program serves 74 at-risk families. For more information about Baby Talk and Baby Talk Early Head Start, visit www.babytalk.org or find them on Facebook. Our next article is headlined, Northgate Barbershop Marks 45 Years. Northgate Barbershop was established May 10, 1971, and has grown to a five-chair shop serving walk-in clientele. The friendly service, lively conversation, and family atmosphere is demonstrated by repeat customers and winner of 11 Best Barbershop Awards. To meet customer needs, we offer Monday punch cards, military discounts on Tuesday and Wednesday, senior discounts on Thursday, and family discounts on Friday. New this year, we will have reinstated straight razor shaves by appointment. Shop hours are 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday. With a 15-foot barber pole at the corner of North Water and Pythian Streets, Northgate is easy to find, and wheelchair access provides easy access for all. Please visit us at 2605 North Water Street in Decatur or call 217-877-7408. Turning to the sports page, this article is entitled, Not Arrieta, but Baez, Chicago. Javier Baez got the pitch he wanted and propelled the Cubs to yet another victory on a day when it looked like Jake Arrieta might finally pick up a loss. Baez homered in the 13th inning after Chicago walked Washington star Bryce Harper a record-tying six times, giving the Cubs a 4-3 victory over the Nationals in a four-game sweep on Sunday. "The most important thing is that we never give up," Baez said. "We had nobody on the bench, and we were still playing hard and giving everything we had." The Cubs won their seventh in a row and improved the best record in the majors to 24-6. Baez homered with one out off Blake Treneman. Baez entered as a pinch hitter, stayed in to play third base, and later connected for his second home run of the season. Travis Wood, 1-0, went one inning for the win. The Cubs won for the 20th straight time when Arias started. The National League Cy Young Award winner got a no decision, giving up two earned runs in five innings of work. Chris Bryant hit a tying two-run single off Nationals reliever Yusimura Petit in the seventh. Arrieta was in line for his first loss since last July 25th, when Philadelphia's Cole Hanels pitched a no-hitter at Wrigley Field, before Chicago rallied for its 11th win in 12 games. The Cubs are off to baseball's best 30-game start since the 1984 Detroit Tigers were 26-4. Arrieta's ERA increased from 0.84 to 1.15 on a day when he struggled with his control. The right-hander lasted just five innings for the second time in three starts. Arrieta walked four, struck out seven, and threw three wild pitches. Washington, which had been leading the National League East, lost its fourth straight. They had a plan, and unfortunately it worked, Harper said. While Cubs manager Joe Maddon insisted the walks were more a product of the circumstances than a concerted effort to avoid him, Chicago looked like a team that had little interest in giving Harper much to hit. The reigning National League MVP walked 13 times in this series. "I know that he's not as hot as he can be coming into this series, but you just don't want to get him hot," Maddon said. "I've been part of that in the past. We did what we had to today, and it happened to work, so good for our guys." Harper matched the Major League record for walks in a game, last done by Jeff Bagwell in 1999. Harper was hit by a pitch the other time he came up to the plate. The Elias Sports Bureau said he was the first player in history to reach base seven times without an official at-bat. Things almost became comical when Harper strolled to the batter's box. In the 10th inning again, and again in the 12th, the Cubs intentionally walked him with runners on first and second and two outs. At one point, Harper was kidding with catcher David Ross as four balls started sailing by. The Cubs escaped both bases-loaded jams by retiring Ryan Zimmerman. Harper drew three intentional walks in the game. Washington's Tanner Roark gave up one run in four hits in six innings of work. The Cubs send left-handed pitcher John Lester to the mound as they open a three-game series at home against the Padres starting tonight. Our next sports article, a little closer to home, "Panna's balance extends to the bench," written by Bill Welt of the Decatur Herald and Review. Panna girls soccer coach Mike Weideman starts each game with his daughter on the bench. He will probably keep it that way in the postseason, even though the freshman forward Caitlin Weideman leads the team with 17 goals near the end of the regular season. "It's nice to have somebody off the bench," Coach Weideman said. "The starters do a very good job, and we don't lose much when we put a sub out there. We don't lose much of anything." Caitlin never anticipated scoring that many goals. "I didn't expect that at all," Caitlin said. "I came into the season and worked as hard as I could and tried to be the best I could be for the team and myself." Coach Weideman insists it really doesn't matter who starts on the field because it's so balanced. Seven other players have had at least three goals this season. They include Daley Denton with 12, Maya Herbert with 8, Shania Schooner with 6, and Rain Vaughn and Renee Weddington each with 4. "It's pretty spread out," Coach Weideman said. That collective effort has propelled the Panthers to a stellar 17-2-1 regular season, which is a slight improvement from the past 2 years. Panna finished last season 18-4 under former head coach Lisa Magliari. "Everyone's in charge of scoring a goal, and everyone's in charge of getting the ball back on defense," Coach Weideman said. "We're playing as a total team out there. It's just not three or four players in charge. It's everybody. Now, if they can just get that elusive regional title." Panna came up just short, 4-2, in last year's regional championship game against Litchfield, and had the misfortune of running up against Rochester the year before that. Maybe the change of postseason format will help the Panthers achieve their goal, with the IHSA arranging teams differently based on their seedings. That has left number 2 Panna as the top seed in its regional, and will most likely play host to number 3 seed Carlinville for the championship. The Panthers defeated Carlinville 3-1 earlier in the season, but Coach Weideman is a little bit more guarded. Panna beat Litchfield last year during the regular season, but the regional championship game turned out differently. "It could be a rematch," Coach Weideman said. "Carlinville, they're going to be looking for revenge." Caitlin welcomes the challenge. "I'm pretty excited for the regional because of how well we've done through our regular season," Caitlin said. "The team has put a lot of effort into this season. That would be a huge accomplishment for the whole soccer program in just 4 years to win a regional title and go farther." Coach Weideman didn't try to shake things up his first season. In fact, it's almost like Magliari never left. He kept the Panthers on the same course as Magliari left it, consistently improving. "The biggest area they've improved on this year is ball possession. It has led to not only more goals, but also more shutouts." Panna has shut out 9 opponents this season. "Coming into this season, we wanted to work on our passing and communication and making sure everything was about quality instead of quantity," Coach Weideman said. "It doesn't matter how hard you kick or how fast you are, it's about quality. You could take 30 shots, but you have to have quality shots and be on target." It has the Panthers rolling into Tuesday's regional semifinal against Piazza Southwestern. "We're just going to keep it going with what we're doing," said Coach Weideman. "We might tweak things, but we're going to keep the ball rolling as it is." Our next article is headlined, "Downstate Dealmakers. Former Decatur editor writes about trio of powerful polls," written by Teresa Churchill of the Decatur Herald and Review. Illinois might look quite different today in terms of higher education, taxation, and even horse racing had it not been for coalitions built between 1947 and 1977 by 3 Democratic kingpins far removed from Chicago. So writes former Decatur resident Robert E. Hartley in his latest book about the state's political history. It's called "The Dealmakers of Downstate Illinois, Paul Powell, Clyde L. Choate, and John H. Stell." While many may remember Powell of Vienna, who served in the General Assembly for the 30 years leading up to his election in 1965 as Secretary of State, the other names are less familiar. Choate was a longtime leader in the State House of Representatives, while Stell served as Lieutenant Governor and briefly as Governor in the late 1930s and as a political operative after leaving elected office. Choate was from Anna, while Stell hailed from McLeansboro. Hartley, aged 79, knew them all through his employment with Lindsay Schaub Newspapers, starting as managing editor of the Decatur Herald in 1966, and ending with a decade as an editor over all the company's newspapers until Lee Enterprises bought them in the late 1970s. "They were small-town boys who grew up in farm country, where loyalty was the most important thing in life," Hartley said, in a telephone interview from his home in Surprise, Arizona. For their home region, their most noted legacy remains the transformation of Southern Illinois University from a small teacher's college to one of the most largest public universities in the state. While SIU President Delete Morris is given credit for having the vision to expand, it could not have happened without the wheeling and dealing of his political friends, specifically Powell and Choate, who got Chicago lawmakers to help them rein state dollars on the idea. Hartley said the pair also worked together to wield the 20 votes Choate controlled in the House so that when the legislature passed the state's first income tax in 1969, the individual rate was lower than the corporate one, at 2.5% and 4% respectively. "Mayor Richard Daley had a lot of power, and so did Republicans from the Chicago suburbs," Hartley said. "Downstate was experiencing diminishing influence during this period, and this was the reality of downstate power at this time." Earlier in his long career in state government, Powell teamed up with Stell to open on betting on horse racing in the 1940s, and the pair became the driving force behind the opening of Cherokee Downs near East St. Louis in 1954. Their ethical shortcomings aside, the principal characters in the book produced a body of work that deserves recognition for its progressive reach into every corner of the state, Hartley writes. "From the attention on Choate and Stell, we see more of a total picture." Hartley is the author or co-author of 9 books, including Battleground 48, Truman, Stevenson, Douglas, and the Most Surprising Election in Illinois History, as well as Paul Simon, The Political Journey of an Illinois Original. We now turn a column written by Mary Hunt for the Herald Review, headlined, Beware the Risk with Gift Cards. Gift cards have become the go-to gift for millions of people. They might seem like the perfect present because they're so easy to purchase. You don't have to put the tiniest bit of thought into this type of gift, and a gift card is generally well received, unless, of course, they get stuck with cards from retailers or restaurants that end up filing for bankruptcy before they get a chance to redeem them. Millions of customers with gift cards to American Apparel, Radio Shack, Wet Seal, Sports Authority, The Sharper Image, Brookstone, and other brands on the growing list of recently bankrupted or financially ailing businesses need to pay attention to what follows. Even though I'm not a fan of gift cards, in the past I've suggested that if you buy one, you should choose a card issued by a retailer, not one issued by a bank. Retailer gift cards are generally free of expiration dates, annoying fees, and other gotchas. Customers should think twice about retailer-issued gift cards. Store-issued cards are not as good a deal as you think during these hard economic times because of the danger of bankruptcy and/or some other court-approved reorganization. Never forget this. Gift cards are not the same as cash. When you buy a gift card, you are purchasing store credit. You may know something about store credit if you've ever tried to return something for a full refund, only to be offered store credit in the amount you want it refunded. Unlike a refund, store credit can only be used at that same store. Retailer bankruptcy filings over the past couple of years have left millions of dollars in gift cards in people's hands with no way to spend the credit. Some bankrupt retailers have obtained court approval to continue accepting gift cards, but that's rare. When the Sharper Image filed for bankruptcy reorganization in 2008, an estimated $20 million in gift cards and gift certificates were unredeemed, and at that point were no longer acceptable. Even now, all these years later, you can still find angry messages in online forums from frustrated people who say they were ripped off by the Sharper Image. Always keep in mind that if that retailer or restaurant files for bankruptcy, which we usually hear about after the fact, you may have no way to spend your credit. Advice to gift card givers. Rather than making gift cards your gift of choice, start purchasing authentic gifts for your friends and relatives. If you cannot bring yourself to break the gift card habit, at least make sure it's for a store or restaurant that is not on the brink of ruin. Advice for gift card recipients. Check your stash. If you have cards for retailers who are filing for bankruptcy protection, find out if that card is still valid. If it is, run, don't walk, to that store and spend the credit. Sure, the credit may not be enough to buy what you really want, or it may be credit to a store you aren't that fond of, but that's the way it is. Chalk it up to the fact that you got a gift that you're not that crazy about. If the card is for a restaurant, plan to go this weekend and enjoy a meal. When it comes to gift cards, the message is clear. It's time for all of us to adopt a use-it-or-lose-it attitude. We finished today's reading with one letter from Dear Abby. Dear Abby, my boyfriend of 5.5 years died unexpectedly. Like so many other Americans, he didn't have life insurance or any money to cover his funeral. For the last 2.5 years, I provided the primary financial support when he came and lived with me. His mother made the decisions about the casket and the service. She asked that money instead of flowers be given to help pay for the cost of the funeral. About $4,000 is still owed. She now says the remaining cost should be divided between her, her ex-husband, and me. I don't think I should be obligated to assume a third of the funeral costs. If I had been married to him, the situation would be different. I have friends and family who agree with me and others who don't. If I tell his mother it isn't my responsibility to pay, she and other family members may never speak to me again. What is your response to this scenario? And the reply is, this may seem negative, but of this I'm positive. Even if you do pay a third of the funeral expenses, those people may turn away from you anyway. So do as your conscience dictates and no one else's. This has been Mary Rose Cottingham with the Decatur Herald Review for Monday, May 9th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.